On Deck Radio, wall-to-wall baseball talk. With Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
The Twins are going to win the World Series. The Twins have won it.
Covering the diamond like the world's biggest rain tarp. Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman. On Deck Radio with 105 The Ticket.
That ball is gone. It's a home run for Victor Martinez. It's a three-run homer for Yoenis Cespedes. Has gone the other way.
Rosario hope to get something started here.
There you go.
Head to left. That hits Suzuki. A run walks in from third base. Up the middle, a base hit. Rosario scores. Hicks right behind him. And it's 6-5. Brian Dozier, the batter. A drive to left field. Are you kidding me?
What a comeback by the Twins. You didn't make the All-Star team, but you just helped beat the Detroit Tigers.
Well, you know what, David Helmer, I wish you would have just left the Detroit point of view, because the cockiness and the glee in their voices on the bombs, like, man, are we special? Are we good? Just absolutely chopped off at the knees, grounded, if you will, galoolied. Incredible, incredible work there. In the studio today, this is On Deck Radio, is Tom Schreier from Cold Omaha, and on the phone is Al Newman. Gene Larkin is in the midst of coaching. They literally are just stepping off the field right now. The Dynamerican Legion team winners in the Gopher Classic 96-team baseball tournament that happens right here in 16 sites throughout the metro area. There's teams from throughout the country. It's an incredible event. If you have a local team, it's worth watching some great baseball. That is the largest of its sort. We're going to have Todd Yonke from the Hopkins Flyers. He is hosting one of those 16 sites. His team is now 2-1 in the tournament. We'll get his perspective on Legion baseball and how it's impacting the game today, and we'll be talking about that. But really, we're going to bring Al Newman in without further ado. Al, a win like that, let's cut to the chase. First of all, good morning to you, and what does that do for that clubhouse?
Well, good morning, guys. It's always good to be on with you. The first thing I thought when I was watching it is typical Verlander. He dominated the game. And then you started to think about the great comeback, and the old words of Tom Kelly, play all nine innings, comes to mind for me. You know, that mantra, play all nine innings, and sure enough, the Twins did, and they pulled out a miraculous win. That's a gut kicker, man. You know, as a manager after the game, you pull your guys in, you know, and you just kind of say, hey, sometimes you just get kicked in the gut and you got to come back and get it tomorrow. But on the side of the Twins, man, that's a happy, happy, joy, joy clubhouse. So, one for the good guys.
Indeed. Tom Schreier was in the press box, probably ready to have other post-game plans, sure, writings, thoughts. Then, you know, one hit leads to another. I think that Danny Santana hit up the middle was huge, yep. And we're going to hear from Paul Molitor here shortly. He addresses that about being really such a big hit for Danny Santana, but not only him, but the club. And then, you know, Brian Dozier comes up and blasts that thing out of the park. From your perspective, what was the feeling on press row?
A lot of people are scrambling, to be honest, because of their job. I mean, you have to, you know, I talked to Pat Borzy, who's a, you know, a veteran. He's worked for the New York Times, and he's at Minnesota Post, all sorts of different places around here. And he said, you know, you got to have two Word docs open. You kind of have to have one plan. I mean, if you if the team were to lose, and another one if they were to win. I think at the same time, people were able to realize, even if you're not a Twins fan, or, you know, especially as you get into media, you become more objective, or kind of more sometimes pulling for the players or even the personnel. Obviously, when you get to meet Terry Ryan, who's a good person, Paul Molitor is a good person, a lot of these guys in the clubhouse, really good people. So, you know, I think they still were able to sit back and say, hey, this is incredible what just happened. And, you know, part of it obviously is Detroit's bullpen, as we've known throughout the years, isn't that great. But Verlander pitched a great game. He looked like Justin Verlander of old. On top of that, I mean, I think the Twins just, they never really gave up. J.R. Graham obviously had those three innings after Irvin Santana didn't look great. That's another crucial part of it. I think Danny Santana, I agree, that was a huge hit. I think he was 0-for-5. in that situation, and he could have gone with Escobar. And I think it's good to give confidence to a young player who has all that talent. And Santana, I think he's in his head a little bit. He's on Twitter reading, you know, people in Spanish are tweeting at him, and we know how hostile people can be when they're anonymous. And
it's pretty easy to do.
Yeah, so I think it's nice to give a talented young player like that the confidence to go into that situation. And then Brian Dozier, I think there's no doubt in a lot of those guys' mind, you know, he's a finisher. He's a guy who, you know, he said he's fine. You know, we can listen to what he said, but, you know, basically he's fine with, you know, going to the lake, spending some time with his wife. He's newly married. You know, I think he wants to prove, too, hey, look, you got to talk about me when you talk about the best in the American League.
Absolutely.
You know what? What's crazy about that, guys, and I was listening to everything you said there, and I started thinking, you know what? That's why star players are star players.
Yeah.
It just seems like when situations arise, they're the ones at the plate, and more times than not, they're the ones to pull things out. And, you know, as a coach, you talk to the middle of your lineup about when there's runners in scoring position and there's a crucial situation. Sometimes you have to go up and just see a pitch, and sometimes you have to look for off speed. And he looked for a breaking ball. He threw the old get me over, and it got over the fence.
The old get me over.
Guys can learn to do that. You know, they've established themselves and they're very comfortable in the batter's box.
Yeah, and I think part of that, too, is that, first of all, the clubhouse is very, you know, they're very close. They all, you know, I've talked to those guys quite a bit, and they say even among the pitchers and the hitters, there's crossover. Those guys, you know, Brian Dozier always looks to the dugout and talks to Mike Pelfrey, who says, you know, hit one out, Rook, and he always treats him as kind of the young player that he once was. And so that's why you see him pointing the dugout saying, hey, I did it, right? But Torrey Hunter said, hey, look, you know what? If it got into me, I'm knocking that ball out, too. So I think, you know, part of that is those guys kind of rub off on each other. And you see that confidence that Torrey Hunter has always had, and he's always had the ability, of course. He has great genes. I think his dad still can dunk, and he's like 60 or someone, but or could dunk at age 60.
My
but
word.
I mean, the lights were going off pretty good in the locker room, man.
Yeah.
There was, the dance club probably was open.
It was smoky. I mean, we, you know, obviously, those guys... It was great. I mean, those guys, we got let in late, and still smoke was lingering. And, you know, that's what Torrey Hunter brings to you, a little bit of fun when you win.
Well, and it's rubbed off for sure. Let's listen into the skipper, Paul Molitor, with his. This is a little bit longer, but he really covers everything that Tom addressed. But we're hearing from him some of the things that he was saying. And listen into what he talks about with the J.R. Graham and even O'Rourke's relief performance, really giving them an opportunity to be, albeit within four runs, striking distance with their last at bat.
It happened so quickly at the end there. You know, we were kind of down on the ground, you know. Seven innings, two hits, down by six. Verlander had a really good night, you know, bouncing back. And I don't know, it just put together a lot of really good at-bats there to make something happen. You know, I was really happy for Danny to get a big hit there. He's been having a tough time. And, you know, we tried to rally him a little bit in that last at-bat. He went up there and had a good at-bat, kind of extend the inning. And, you know, Brian just puts a little punctuation mark on everything that's transpired with him this first half. Last week, the extra vote. There's a lot of people disappointed here, and rightfully so. You know, the system's flawed. We all know that to some degree. And I don't really have any fault with that. It's just they're trying to get it right. But to have a player like that not get an opportunity just doesn't seem fair. So it's a really good win for us. Kind of understatement of my first night, 85 games. Detroit's had our number. When you're looking down and out and find a way to come back and win a game with seven in the ninth, that's impressive. Trevor May, another one-inning victory. J.R. Graham, three zeros. O'Rourke, they don't seem so significant at the time, but you know, at the end of the day, getting out of that first and third, nobody out there, even in the top of the ninth, you know, it's just, you never know what's going to happen.
Al, let's talk about Brian Dozier and the All-Star snub and then coming in second in the last chance vote. Players say it doesn't fuel them, motivate them, you know, any of that stuff. You know, they don't care, they don't think about it, but there has to be a little bit of you look around what's at your position in your league and, you know, I mean, Mike Moustakas, great, whatever. This is a guy that was sent down to AAA at one point, resurrected into a great playoff run. But that's got to fire you up a little bit as a player, doesn't it?
Most definitely. I mean, there's a reason why he had another big week leading into it. His senses were finally tuned. He was, man, you're talking about a guy that was a mission, and I'm not saying that players aren't always locked in or focused, but, you know, the stars go to a different level at certain times, whether it be playoff or close ball games, he wanted that all-star vote, and he had an exceptional week. And it showed why he should be an all-star. He's hurting. He says all the right things, but, you know, you can never get that back. And next year, who knows where he's going to be as far as, you know, hitting well or playing well. When you get a chance, you do want the star. And unfortunately, he's not going to get there this year.
Yeah, I mean, I understand he's 28 in the prime of his career, but also not, you know, I mean, I think it'd be significant to get the All-Star vote or get into the All-Star game, rather, at this age and where he is in his career. At the same time, I'm getting the impression that he's the real deal. This is an anomaly. I think he can hit. I think there's probably improvements to be made, too. Everyone talks about going to the opposite field. Obviously, he has the power, but just probably, again, understanding kind of what pitchers are doing to him. There's always improvements to be made. And on the field, I don't think that defense is going to go away. It's not as though he's so old that he's going to kind of fall apart in the next few years. I think we should see, you know, 3 or 4 years more of defense like that, if not more. He stays in shape. I think he always works on that. He's worked with Paul Mahler before he was a manager. So I think he should get another crack, and we shouldn't see him any differently. I mean, he's an all-star caliber player and ultimately an integral part of the Minnesota Twins.
Irvin Santana was lights out when he opened up in Kansas City with what, you know, I feel was one of the best Twins starting pitching performances. It was precision. It was impressive. Struggled a little bit last night. I mean, you can expect that at any level of this game. But from both of you, let's start with you, Al. Your impressions on Irvin Santana and what we can expect to see down to the end of the season here.
Well, when I watched those pitches that were hit for home runs, I thought two or three of them were very good pitches. I don't know how Seth kept that ball fair. But a little breaking ball on the inside portion of the plate, actually on the corner, and he was able to keep that ball fair. I know pitchers like Santana, they throw calculating strikes that if you do hit them, you can't keep them fair, and that was definitely one of those pitches. So I thought he was just as sharp. I just didn't keep the ball in the ballpark, and I know that sounds funny, but again, two of those three pitches I thought were pretty good pitches as far as where they were on the plate and their height, and I just think the good hitters, they get those pitches on occasion.
Yeah, he said he didn't have great stuff, but again, I think that's probably a natural thing to say after having a game like that. It seemed like he you know, when he wanted to go inside, he went inside, but it was inside and up, and he just missed his mark kind of by a tick. But my understanding is that these, you know, the Detroit hitters, you give them just an inch and they, you know, knock it a mile.
Most definitely.
Well, they definitely proved that last night. Onto the bullpen. J.R. Graham has been very solid in whatever role he's been asked to do and even put in that really impressive spot start for this club. And then it looks like the lefty, O'Rourke, is really getting the job done, getting lefty and righties out so far, Tom. And, I've been impressed with his effort. He had the two big strikeouts in the eighth inning. And, was that the ninth inning he did that?
It was the eighth. And then May had the ninth.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. May had the ninth.
So the joke there is that May does is win, right? You know, he gets put in these situations, gets those one-inning wins. I think, but yeah, you're right with Ryan O'Rourke. I think it's a guy who's 27. He's kind of itching to get that opportunity because he's a 13th round pick and he kills lefties and it's tough because I don't think, you know, organizations love that when you just have a lefty specialist and obviously, you put in and you only get minimal usage, but he's shown he has stuff and I think they need guys to step up from the minor leagues to help out the bullpen because, you know what, Aaron Thompson obviously had two good months, got sent down, and Blaine Boyer's had some bad luck here, but he's also shown signs where he's not kind of the pitcher he was in the beginning, so all that means is a guy like Ryan O'Rourke needs to step up and you know, deliver for the bullpen.
Al, what happens there when a relief pitcher or a pitcher has the two quick months that are very impressive that Tom illustrated with Thompson and Boyer? What causes a little bit of this lull around this time of the year?
Well, you know, for me, as a manager, never at the major league level, but when you do see that, I think the guys stop trusting their stuff. They maybe had a couple of close calls, and they wondering, are their pitchers fading? Are they hitting their spots or not? And when you start thinking out there and started just trusting your release point and your balance to get you to the location that you're trying to reach, you're going to have trouble. You know, I know in one case, maybe he's not licking his fingers enough and he's not getting the movement that he does, because he always puts all four fingers in his mouth. Maybe he's not getting enough saliva.
Yeah, well, or here it is. You just nailed it. It's it's warmer out, so they're not. There's
the humidity is driving his fingers before he gets to the ball.
It's the cotton mouth. He can't get enough saliva. It's just paste. Perfect. You nailed it.
His fingers every time, though.
Miguel Sano, here's another guy that's been really impressive. Both of you gentlemen, to me, I hate to do this, but I'm going there. Here's why he reminds me of Kirby Puckett. You two ready?
Yeah, sure.
He smiles all the time. He plays a game with zest and zeal. He hits bad balls hard and anywhere. And it doesn't matter what the situation, someone better make a play or they're getting him out. To me, those are things I can make. I'm not saying he is Kirby Puckett, but Al, he kind of reminds me of him in ways like that.
Well, you know, I do see that. But for some reason, I keep thinking about Andres Galarraga. And I just think because if it's a bigger bodied person, you know, as far as height is concerned, but you are so correct in your assessment between Kirby Puckett, Vladimir Guerrero, and Andres Galarraga to name three guys that truly could hit any pitch that was thrown in regards to circumstance. And the young man seems to have nice balance. The games that I've seen, he seems confident. And I tell you what, he's already been accepted into the circle of the team. You know, it's been a long wait for him and the anticipation of what he is capable of, but he's been very calm, and he seems to have stayed off the breaking pitches thus far.
Well, no, they just jinxed him. We're going to come back with more. It's going to be David Helmer tossing out our phenomenal producer, executive producer, whatever else you want to call him, the brain trust of the show. Five questions comes up. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. And welcome back. We're going to go, we're going to talk to the doctor, Al Newman, here. He's got five questions that are going to be asked of him. And I think what we'll do with this is, Tom, you and I will let the expert, the former major leaguer,
sure,
work it. Current manager of Alexandria in the Northwoods League, as Dave Helmer will ask the five questions. And then we'll just chip in a little bit here and there. But this is pretty much the gospel according to Al Newman.
All right, well, leading off, Glenn Perkins broke Joe Nathan's consecutive save record this week. I think he broke it against the Orioles on Wednesday afternoon. Got me to thinking about successful closers in Twins history. You got Rick Aguilera, Eddie Guardado stepped in, did a nice job. Joe Nathan absolutely was a great one, and Glenn Perkins is stepping into that role nicely. Who do you think is the greatest closer in Twins history?
Well, you forgot one of my longtime good buddies, Jeff Reardon.
Oh,
was
yes.
Was the closer on the 87 team. You know, I played my whole career with Jeff, starting in Montreal. But if you want to go with the Twins closers, I think I'd have to go with, for me, the coach up in the big leagues between Eddie Guardado and Joe Nathan. And I'm going to go with Steady Eddie. Although Joe Nathan, you know, had some big ones, you just couldn't figure out how Eddie could get it done. Although he was a top stepper. If you're a manager, he had a lot of charisma out there. And I'm going to have to go with Eddie Guardado.
You know, Rick Aguilera, now no thought there. I mean, I know you mentioned him, but what would he have needed to be within that discussion, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, Rick was a starter. He was good looking. He was a good looking guy. Had the beard and the tailored uniform. And,
yeah, the uniform did look good on him.
He had good stuff, you know, taking nothing away from him. It was just that, you know, Eddie had a style. And everybody looked out there and saw 5'8", 5'9", left-handed pitcher with just average stuff. But he got it done. You know, Rick, when you mentioned Rick Aguilera and Joe Nathan, they could cut you up with three pitches. You know, you knew they had the velocity. But just Eddie just had a big heart out there, and he was able to get it done. So taking nothing away from those other guys, it was just a matter of, as I mentioned, you never knew if Eddie was going to get it done, but he always seemed to get it done.
I think, I mean, I can't really speak to this because I probably only saw Nathan, maybe a little bit of those other guys when I was younger, but Eddie Gordato, a little inside information here, he actually helped Mike Pelfrey with his split finger, and I think that's been a key for him this year. He's obviously a big personality, speaks really well of Mike Pelfrey, but I thought that was kind of cool that he's able to, despite being such a great player, and sometimes I think those guys get frustrated with, you know, with coaching because those guys aren't as good as they were, you know, he's able to relay what, you know, helped him be successful to a guy like Mike Pelfrey, who's obviously had kind of a shaky career so far.
Next question.
All right, up next we have Eddie Rosario, Aaron Hicks, and Torrey Hunter have all been contributing to the big league club quite well, and you have Shane Robinson, who can plug into almost any spot in that outfield. Buxton is now dealing with some inflammation. That's kind of a little bit of a setback for him, but what do you do with Buxton when he's healthy and he's ready to come back to this team?
Good question.
Well, I'm sorry. Once again, the injury bug has gotten Mr. Buxton, and I would have to send him out to reestablish himself. There's something to the karma of the team and the flow of the team, and I'm sure people say you don't lose a job because of injury, but yeah, I don't know if he really had taken the job in his short tenure on the field. So I've got to go with the guys that are getting it done. The Twins are 4 or 5 games back going into the All-Star break. And you do need to get off to a pretty good start and stay consistent. So I'm going to stay with the guys that are out there. Mr. Buxton's got to go back and prove himself.
I would agree with you on that, Al, with Rosario, Hicks, and Hunter. You can also add in, I like Shane Robinson to play all angles. I think he's very good. He's got good speed. And I'm also very solid with Escobar to be a fifth guy if you need him to go out there. To me, you mentioned chemistry and how things worked, Al. It feels like there's a tightness to this group, and maybe Byron Buxton is just not quite there yet. I'm not saying that he earned the job, because has Hicks really lost the job, Tom Schreier?
Yeah, I don't think he has, given the catches he's made and that he's really performing at the plate. I really think, and I'm working on a story right now on Aaron Hicks, who I've seen throughout his career, he's starting to put it together. And really, if he has that mentality going out there, realizing that he's so athletic and that he is better than most of the competition he'll face, I think, you know, once he gets that mental side together, he will play well. One thing on Buxton is that he won't see breaking pitches like he kind of saw in the majors in Double A. In Triple A, you're going to have guys who were in the major leagues who offer that kind of stuff to hit. And I think if he figures that out, that's kind of the missing piece, at least early in his career. And I just don't know if he'd survive in the major leagues without being able to hit breaking pitches like the major league pitchers throw.
Next question.
Joe Mauer is leading the team in batting, hitting .276. He's done a pretty nice job over the last couple of weeks getting his average up that far. Now, is there a hitter on this team that will be batting .300 by the end of the season? Who is he?
Wow, the guy that will be hitting .300. That's a tough call. I mean, Joe always, you know, you look at Joe Mauer when the season starts and you just put his numbers up on the board and you assume he's going to be there. I know definitely the the position change has affected his strike zone. He's not blocking balls in front of those umpires anymore, so some of those borderline pitches are not going his way. As far as somebody hitting .300 for the Twins, I just can't see it, but I think they'll have a lot of 265 to 290 type hitters, which is more than enough to keep some consistency 1 through 9.
I would say Joe Mauer is your best chance of anybody being able to get that done, surging a little bit, getting up toward the 270 marker, maybe a little higher. But the bigger question for me to you, Al, is I've been saying 250 is the new 280 in this era of baseball. Is that an understatement? Or?
You know, I tell guys nowadays it's so much harder to hit now. You know, when you don't see a pitcher 2 or 3 times a game, and then once the sixth inning starts, you got these 100-mile-an-hour specialists coming in from the bullpen. There is no justice for hitters anymore, so you're very close. I know on the scouting scale, it has changed a little bit. Numbers are harder to achieve to be a sixth player, which was a premier regular player. Now is like your average major league player. Just because of the numbers have to be changed according to velocity. So it is tougher to hit now. And once again, as you mentioned, Joe Mauer is having a pretty good year outside of the power numbers. But yet, who's going to be that guy to carry this ball club? And it looks like it's going to be Dozier.
That's a very good call there. Tom, you have something to add to that?
Yeah, I would say Maurer's working on his bunting, and I think it's a way to kind of move the shift so that he can get some balls through the middle.
Sure.
It's an interesting strategy, actually. And the other thing, too, is Brandon Warren wrote a really nice story where he went down, talked to Tom Bernanski, and they are working more on getting the hitting opposite field, something Maurer's done throughout his career, but really finding the gaps
there.
He's
hitting all fields right
now,
exactly. Which has really loosened all of that up, and I think is helping him much more this year. Next question.
Trade deadline is just under a few weeks away, and the Twins are still in contention for a playoff spot. So what do you see them doing? Will they be buyers, sellers, or are they going to be Switzerland and remain neutral throughout the process?
Well, being first up, I've got to say Mr. Santana is your golden nugget. He spent those first, 80 days, 100 days on the restricted list. And now he's back, so you can consider that a pickup. He's had one good one and one so-so start, or a stinker, as some would say. So I would say that's the major piece. I think now you just get add-ons. You say they've been talking about Nephi Felice, but I believe he is going to sign somewhere else. But, you know, they may try to do something in that bullpen, but it won't be anything major. And maybe a position player or two that can come off that bench. With a veteran presence. So I don't see them doing much, but I think the big acquisition was their free agent guy that they expected to have all year.
I'm in agreement with that.
I would say don't blow up this team. Keep your prospects.
Yes.
You gotta. What you have to avoid is kind of the Wilson, Ramos, or Matt Capps trade. You know, Terry Ryan defended it again yesterday, saying, "Hey, look, we were trying to win the World Series."
Did Terry Ryan make that trade though?
No, it was Bill Smith. But Bill Smith is still
he's
in the organization. Yeah. But yeah.
You heard that? What a joke.
Here's what I'm saying is that they need to. You got to be careful shipping off your prospects because Wilson Ramos is actually a player who even on this team would be valuable being a hitting catcher, given what Kurt Suzuki's offered at the plate so far. So, you know, and again, the J.J. Hardy trade, you can go on down the line. But, at this point, I think you keep with your guys, you see how far this group can go, and then next year you reevaluate and say, hey, okay, where do we need to make some trades, some upgrades, you know, look to the outside maybe a little bit.
Time for one more, David.
Yeah, well, take about a minute on this one. Clearly the All-Star game for baseball is probably the best actual All-Star game in professional sports. So, Al, do you have a favorite moment from the Midsummer Classic?
No, you know, I just enjoyed watching my former teammates get into the game and the excitement that it brought, that when you were a player, you were going to get a gift when he got back. So I've always wondered what my gift would be from the All-Stars back to the teammates.
What was your best gift?
They always brought T-shirts or hats. They never brought anything real special.
Oh, nothing that really was that exciting. Phenomenal.
Right, but, you know, you always felt like nobody else would have what you got, you know. So it was the player's version of whatever they got, and it was always an honor just to receive something.
Old school for me was the Ray Fosse blow-up from Pete Rose. Yes, I was old enough for that gentleman in the studio.
Sure.
And then also new school would be the Torrey Hunter catch in Milwaukee.
I like the Ripken home run against Chan Ho Park in his last game.
That wasn't bad. And then how about this final one? In New York, when Josh Hamilton was blowing the ball up all over New York, right? Chris Berman kept reminding us that Josh Hamilton was recovering from a drug addiction like 3,000 times. It was just annoying. And then his voice kept getting more hoarse. But beyond that was watching Morneau win it.
Yeah, he is, right?
Oh, it was classic. When we come back, Todd Yockey from the Hopkins American Legion Flyers baseball team will be joining us. We're going to talk about the Gopher Classic. It's a 96-team tournament that's happening right here in the Metro for American Legion Baseball. On Deck Radio continues right after this. Ooh, look at this little Donnie Iris. Did you pull this one out, Dave Helmer?
Oh, yeah. Why wouldn't I?
I used to call Lisa Wright down the hallway. She's working right now at KQ. Requested.
Lisa Miller?
Oh, I'm sorry, Lisa Miller. Jeez, Lisa Wright. My bad. Lisa Miller. Big impact there. What do you do? All right, here we go. On Deck Radio, we talked a lot about this 96-team baseball tournament that Jim Peck from the Excelsior American Legion baseball team is putting on, and he has 16 locations, teams from strewn from throughout the country. Something called Omaha Scut is playing in this thing. And they are killing people, by the way. Todd Yonke is coach of the Hopkins Flyers. He's also heading up one of the sites at Big Willow in Minnetonka. Todd, coming off the heels of a 7-3 victory today, congratulations on that, and thanks for joining us here today.
Thanks, Pete. Absolutely. Glad to be here.
So this tournament, you know, you've been part of American Legion Baseball for a long time, and, you know, there's a lot going on with this thing. Tell me what it's like when you start bringing in these teams from North Dakota, South Dakota, Colorado, Canada. Do you get different looks, different levels of play, or is this all pretty balanced?
You know, it's always intriguing. It's a fun experience for the team, for the kids. You know, we've got our great rivalries with our crosstown teams, but it's always fun, as you say, to see a team Manitoba come in and play with 20 kids, or a team from Regis Jesuit in Colorado, which is the team we competed against today. For the most part, the level of play is usually up there. You know, Jim Peck, who runs the tournament and has for, gosh, 30 years now, you know, knows these teams. He's traveled around the country extensively. So typically, more often than not, the competitive level is very, very high most often.
You know, Coach, I've been coaching Legion Baseball 4 or 5 years there with Apple Valley and Bruce Young. And,
oh, yeah, people, yeah, you bet.
And I tell you what, it is very competitive. I mean, I love the tournaments. It was always the Gopher Classic was the one you always looked at. But, you know, you went to tournaments in New Ulm, and then you went to St. Cloud, and you got to see the caliber of baseball. And then you bring that Gopher Classic in, and, man, I just remember teams from Fargo, Moorhead, and places like that. They would bring quite a crowd with them on these weekend tournaments.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Mr. Newman. It's a great experience. Like I say, these teams, a lot of them travel extremely well. You know, Pete mentioned Omaha Scut. These teams are traveling all summer long. We, you know, our Hopkins Club gets out typically for one out-of-towner throughout the summer. But we're playing pretty much every weekend. But you're right, these clubs, these travel well. These Omaha teams, the Colorados, the South Dakotas. This is what Legion Baseball is all about. It's summer baseball. You know, you give up your time at the lake, you give up your time doing other things, and you're playing ball 7 days a week more often than not. It's great. We love it.
You know, it's amazing. The kids don't really complain about having to be at the park either, do they, Todd? They come ready to go, whether it's practice or game time. Plenty of games to be played. I'm a believer that baseball, you get better playing games, and you definitely see it throughout the course of the year. Share that experience you've had with the kids over the years. What have you been there? Just about a decade with that Hopkins Flyers program?
Yeah. This is year number 10 at Hopkins for me. I worked for a couple of years with the Excelsior Legion program in Minnetonka prior to that.
How dare you?
Yeah, it's great. You know, I mean, I'm all for summer baseball, obviously being a Legion guy. I think the spring is a great season. I don't think it's really representative truly of what baseball is all about because, right, you know, you're playing a couple games a week. You're practicing quite a bit more. You know, you're not playing any more than 20 games. Where in the summertime, you know, you're going at it 6 days a week and probably playing 4 or 5 games a weekend, getting at it with league play during the week, and then you go into the sub-state postseason and you get after it. So yeah, I'm a huge believer in these kids got to get out there and get it done game live, game real situations, and the Legion season certainly provides for that with the schedule.
Hey, Coach, Al Newman again. I wanted to ask you, do you find or have you seen over the last 2 or 3 years the importance of Legion Baseball returning as far as a recruiting tool for the colleges because of their budgetary cuts, or is it still kind of hit and miss with the college coaches?
I think that, and it's a great question, Coach. You know, you see the summer, especially in the Gopher Classic, I mean, there's not a better opportunity for college coaches, really regionally, but you can even broaden that out a little bit, wide stroke, to get to see 96 teams at 16 different sites in the metro area. Tremendous recruiting tool for these college coaches. You see them at every site every day. I've been running the site up at Big Willow. I've seen now gosh, 12 to 14 college coaches in just the day and one game we've played so far. So very well represented by college coaches, and it's a great atmosphere, especially this Gopher Classic, like I say, with 96 ball clubs across the metro area.
We're talking. We are speaking with a very well-spoken Todd Yonke, the head coach and manager. You can pay me later, Todd, of the Hopkins Flyers American Legion baseball program. And you know, Todd, the great thing was I was at two locations, like you said, on the Scouts. It's amazing. There were a ton at Big Willow. There were equally as many at Braemar. You know what the great part about Big Willow is that green kind of, I would call it pitcher's eye that you have that blacks out the back of the dish. I mean, you had the radar guns disguised. It was beautiful.
Yeah,
they stand right behind that and shoot there.
Yeah, well, the kids find a way of seeing the guns. They smell those things out, and if they see them or hear them or feel them, they try and crank it up and throw their arm off. But you're right, it does disguise them a little bit there, Big Willow.
How about just the level of coaching? Yeah, obviously, you know, I'm pretty well involved with the South Hennepin American Legion, and really for the state, and I'm a big backer of it, believe in it a lot. But I look around just your division alone, the level of coaching, you know, you've got yourself. I mean, you've been deep in U.S. baseball. You've worked with Lunch McKenzie along the way. You've got Neil Lerner on your staff, who's a former high school varsity coach. You've got Gene Larkin, Scott Hackett. You go up and down the list. There's some pretty impressive coaching talent out there. Can you talk to that? I think that's kind of poo-pooed in the tournament travel type circles.
You know, I think that's a great point you're making, Pete, and it's something I think that's easily overlooked by a lot of parents, and they see this American Legion baseball brand and what they attribute that to, I think, is a lot of veterans and a lot of people that the game is potentially kind of passing them by. You know, like you say, if you go into South Hennepin alone, the Edinas, the Excelsiors, the Hopkins, the Bloomingtons, the Benilde St. Margaret's, the level of coaches and the experience level of coaches out there is just outstanding. And then you go a little further south, you know, where Mr. Newman worked with Bruce Young and you go up north in the Coon Rapids and the Maple Groves, there's just a tremendous wealth of knowledge in the American Legion coaching ranks right now. And it's been that way that I've seen it for the last 10, 12 years. So it's fantastic. It's guys that want to be around.
Hey, and you didn't fail to mention him. You mentioned him earlier, the guy who runs the tournament. Peter, I just lost his name.
Jim Peck.
Yeah, Mr. Peck. Who I think just a few years ago was the recipient of a Twins Award for all his hard work in baseball. I think 2013 Man of the Year or whatever. He's done a tremendous job with the youth baseball. I know when I was in Legion Ball, he ran most of the tournaments when the state and region started. Mr. Peck was there. So there's a guy with a lot of history and the dedication to try to make things successful around here in Legion baseball.
He's been a huge part of it, very influential in advocating for kids and getting college coaches out here and providing that in for lack of a better term for these kids.
Yeah.
And he's done an extremely tremendous job, you bet.
For both of you who've coached at this level and understand it, most of these players want to play at the next level. And the one thing that I've noticed with your program, Todd, and it's really no different than anybody else's, it's an incredible preparatory process for what college is like. You know, I mean, it's not just sitting around, playing tiddlywinks and then playing catch and knocking a couple balls around. It's a legitimate focus. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. I think what you do is give these guys the reality of what to do, time management, and how to prepare. Can you touch on that as how important it is to learn going in and how much it can help you as a college player?
Yeah, absolutely. A great, fantastic question. That's a huge part of how we go about our business at Hopkins. We've got myself, Coach Lerner. Both have been college coaches for in excess of 7-8 years. We've got some other guys. We take a lot of pride in understanding what it takes to compete at the next level. And our feeling is that not only for baseball-wise, for the guys that are actually going to compete at the D1, 2, 3 level, NCAA, NAIA, whatever, that a lot of those things that we're trying to attribute to them also go in life. So if they don't play at the next level, that's okay. They're going to be prepared for, you know, accountability is a big word that we use. Responsibility, being accountable for one's actions. A lot of things we do when we travel, we have itineraries. We do it kind of with a professional feel where you got to be on the bus by this time. We're going to have breakfast at this time. We're going to do these types of things. So we're trying to prepare these kids for, obviously, first and foremost, the guys that are going to compete and play at the next level. But even the guys that aren't going to compete at the next level, I think they're going to take with them some fantastic lessons in life that will help benefit them for the future.
Great stuff, Todd Yonke. We thank you for your time. We know you're busy working the tournament. You've got a couple of young kids. You give a lot to the Hopkins Flyers program and youth baseball players. I've seen it up close and personal, folks. This guy is a talented young man. He does terrific work, and he is definitely something that the baseball community should be proud of, because where Todd stands, there are plenty more.
Todd, good luck, buddy.
Thank you, sir. Pleasure to talk to you guys, and appreciate the kind words, Pete. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. We'll see you tonight. We'll Take be back care, with more. We have a great segment coming up. This is the All-Star Week segment. Al, are you ready for this one? Dave Helmer will help me drive the bus on this one. This should be interesting. On Deck Radio continues on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Well, this certainly was playing last night, Tom Schreier, in the ninth inning, wasn't it?
Yeah, don't stop believing.
Well, honestly, I mean, when we got into the Twins, we talked about that amazing comeback last night. What were you thinking? I mean, when Dozier came up, were you like, oh, this could happen?
Yeah, I think, and this is kind of going back to what I said with the All-Star game, he's earned the credibility that this is not a fluke, and that he, you know, I understand he was an eighth-round pick and struggled in his first year in the major leagues, obviously converted from a shortstop to a second baseman, but he's a confident player. It's kind of a quiet confidence, but even a guy like Torrey Hunter, we talk about him being outgoing and kind of certainly when he, you know, we know all about the explosion he had where he's taking off his clothes and actually, you know, the old Tiger teammates were making fun of him at batting practice before the game the other night. But, you know, he talks about that inner confidence. Don't be cocky. Don't tell everyone how good you are. Just go out there and do it. And I think, you know, Brian Dozier has that as well.
Let the body of work speak for itself. By the way, Detroit reacted to that meltdown in the bullpen with the signing here just now, didn't they?
Yeah, so they got Neftali Feliz, and it's, you know, just announced. I think it's, you know, a need for the Tigers. It's, you know, unfortunate because the Twins probably could have gone after a guy like that. But, you know, I know it's been tossed around. Like, LaTroy Hawkins is still out there playing. You know, so go bring back a guy like that. I mean, I think that'd be hilarious. Other than that, you know, hopefully the young guys can step up in O'Rourke. Hopefully Thompson can come back, something like that.
By the way, got to say hello to Charles Foster, who's listening on. I think he's streaming live on iHeartRadio. Maybe Dan Vetch is listening, too, as well. Hello to you. And by the way, hello. Dan Vetch is under the same Pete Wagner influence that Miguel Sano is a little bit of a reminder of Kirby Puckett in many ways. Al Newman. Oh, by the way, if you want to get your scores while we're on that Legion tournament, it's kind of fun. Go to ExcelsiorLegionBaseball.com. It'll say Gopher brackets, pool standings. It's all there. By the way, if you're wondering, I'm doing it sports content management. If you want me to manage your tournaments, teams, or leagues, give me a call. Okay, let's get into this segment.
This is the hardest working man in radio that I know. I just want the people out there to know that you do work hard, man.
Thank you. Sometimes I don't even know what I'm doing. Tom looked over at me. I feel like I'm in a prog rock band with the keyboards with the multiple layers, you know?
Dave and I will keep you in check. Dave and I will make sure things don't go off the rail. We got Sam in the studio somewhere.
Hey, Sam. was he here to answer the phones?
Yeah, I don't know what Sam's
doing. Didn't even give out the number.
He's prepping for the wake-up call.
Dave Helmer, the All-Star Week's coming up, and we've got new Home Run Derby rules. Why don't you outline those for us?
All right, it's no longer American League versus National League. They do it bracket style. They seeded everybody that's participating according to how many home runs they have on the year. So Albert Pujols is your number one seed and so forth. They now have a time limit as opposed to they just sit there and jack home runs until they hit 30 and get tired. They have five
so
minutes.
So there's pressure.
Yeah. 5 minutes, the clock does
hit
stop
as many as you can
in the final minute when there's a home run hit. And then it starts back up if they hit a ground ball to the pitcher or whatever. And they can, per home run, you can add bonus time. I think you can add up to 90 seconds per round. So they really want to speed this thing up and make it a lot better for the audience.
What do you think, Al?
I think it's a lot better for Chris Berman.
It's going to help the voice.
After a while, it just kind of, how many times do you look to a guy and go, back.
Oh, God!
It gets annoying after a while. Yeah, but, you know, Chris is one of the best ever, and anything that they can do to speed up the home run contest, because there's no reason for that to last 2-3 hours like it has.
No question. Tom, are you excited about the new format? Get rid of the leagues and put the pressure on. Not the pressure on.
I think it's a focus.
Well,
on new
Hamilton
players.
Lost because he hit so many and got so tired. And is that really...
Yeah, that was so funny. I forgot about that.
That was one of my favorite moments.
That's what you'll remember. It was in the old Yankee Stadium, I believe. And obviously a kind of a cool comeback story where he had the drug issues and he's always been that, you know, kind of electrifying
player. Well, if you didn't know, like I said earlier, Chris Berman kept reminding you about every other swing. But anyway,
go
ahead.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I look at some of these guys here, Chris Bryant, Jock Peterson, Manny Machado. I'd like to see a young player kind of take advantage of this, kind of, you know, use the spotlight you'll have playing against a Pujols, playing against a fielder. I would like to see kind of a reminder that this is becoming kind of a young man's game and that we have so much talent beyond Bryce Harper and Mike Trout, who obviously are phenomenal players. But make a name for yourself. And you know, I saw Chris Bryant live the other night, and he is freak athlete. It's really fun to watch.
I would say, let's go with our favorites here. I think it's going to be a great coming out party for Chris Bryant. I think he's going to be well known by those that don't know him and get to see what he does. But if I were to pick a favorite in here, I got to go with the way Pujols is swinging the bat right now. He's in a controlled environment. Are you kidding me? Prince Fielder, I can't say no to that either. But I think I'm watching for Pujols to win the whole thing.
I think
he does have the discipline in the strike zone. And I can just see him in batting practice being a guy that, as they used to call him, the machine. I can just see him sitting in and getting locked into a particular zone and launching him. I'm with you. Pujols.
Yep. We got two Pujols.
I think he's the favorite, but like I said, on that side of the bracket, he's the 1 seed. 8 seed would be Bryant. Again, that'd be a big upset, but Brian does possess, you know, a lot of talent as a young player. I hope one of those guys, whoever, Peterson or Machado, whoever comes out of that, the 4 or 5 rank, you know, maybe challenges Pujols. And again, that's a great way to make a name for yourself. Hey, I beat Pujols, who's having this great year, who has this great career in the home run derby.
It's going to be fun. So, of course, that's probably in these days the best part about the All-Star game. How about this? Dave, you brought up the voting and it needing to be fixed.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts there?
I actually have an idea. Like, number one, I think it should kind of go back to in-park balloting. Like, get rid of the 35-time voting online.
They're not going to do that because it's clicks. Yeah. It's so much money.
You vote for the president 35 times. That yourself says it's not a good thing.
That is so good. Yeah. So from Dave's perspective, something does need to be done, because if you've got a ball club that's winning, you probably have good players. You probably have a decent crowd that's filling the stands, and therefore you're going to have more people on their phones clicking 35 times, engaged, part of the process. They definitely are going to want to keep the social media part of this thing going. I mean, that's an important thing. So can you meet a happy medium in there somewhere? I don't know.
What you have to do is have percentages. So I think, you know, managers, coaches and the like, they get to choose, you know,
a 50% input.
Yeah, or something like that. And part of me believes, too, they should have, like, it should be divided up, media, fans, and as well as the coaches. And the fans should have a significant, they maybe even should have a majority of the vote. But I think that, you know, around baseball, there is really an appreciation, not just for, hey, it's my team and it's my guys, that's important, but also, look, there's a, you know, appreciation for the competition that comes into your park every night.
I think the fans should only be allowed to vote for 3 guys.
Really?
Yeah, I think it would really get a wider diversity of teams for starters in the All-Star game.
That's interesting.
So there you go.
I think that the fans should pick the preliminary list that the players and coaches then choose from.
So you're saying the fans pick the list, the coaches, players finalize. How about if we do a hybrid of what Dave is suggesting, where you can only pick one position player at each spot? What I mean by that is you said 3 players?
Yeah.
So I'm saying one infielder. Leave the pitching to the you already do that. So maybe you can pick 2 or 3, whatever it is, and you can vote as many times. They'll still get their clicks, and maybe you can start Or
maybe the opposite of what Al is saying is that you actually have the coaches say, hey, this is who you select from and the fans choose from there. Because that gets like Omar Infante out of there. And you know what? Listen.
Exactly.
Listen. At the very least, that was a hilarious storyline that Omar Infante might have made the All-Star team.
How did you even walk out there?
I know. No, and here's what Terry Ryan said, though. Hey, look, this game counts. And he, you know, I asked him about this, and he said, you know what, I like that it counts because it keeps the players involved. It keeps people watching to the ninth inning. But you have to have some coach input, and you have to have some managerial input in a game that counts.
For the Angels.
What now?
Who's the utility type player? I guess he's their second baseman.
You mean Boston or the Angels?
I thought it was Boston.
Because there's that guy like Angels. Holt.
Yes. No, maybe it's Boston. Yes, it is Boston. It's
Brock Holt.
He's the second baseman, right?
Yeah, he's all over, though. I think Ned Yost wants him because you can use him in multiple different situations.
Okay, I was trying to figure that one out. It's like, who is this guy?
Yeah, Boston has to have a representative.
You know, although I'm done. It made me feel good that he played all around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Funny those guys are getting some do.
How about if you keep everything the same, but managers get two vetoes or something like that? So, you know what? I don't want this guy in there.
That would really anger fans.
Yeah. No, how about the poor player gets voted in by the fans, and then the coach says, "No, you know, you guys are idiots. You don't know any better. I'm going to take this guy and that guy." Oh, and hey, by the way, bummer for you. And then you know what you get into, obviously, is the bonus incentives and all of that, Al. So you got Terry Ryan calls Ned Yost. Hey, can you kind of keep him off? We don't want to drop that.
Well, you know, back in the day, you may not have put that past some of the owners.
Cal Griffin.
You know, that might have could have happened probably in the late 70s, early 80s, when incentives were a huge part of contracts. But I don't know, not so much anymore, but it would be fun to talk about.
Well, guys, guess what? Our hour's up.
No way.
Our hour's up.
It's been good.
Can you believe it, Al? Enjoy your stay in Mankato. We will be talking to you next week. Tom Schreier, you take care. Gene Larkin should be not coaching, I hope. We should have thought about that when we made the schedule a little bit better. That's going to do it. Al Newman, thanks for joining us. David Helmer.
No problem.
Tom Schreier.
Yeah,
of course,
you.
Todd Yonke. I'm Pete Wagner. So long, everybody.